Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Naturalist and explorer Paul Rosalie's extraordinary adventure in the uncharted tributaries of the Western Amazon is a tale of discovery that vividly captures the awe, beauty, and isolation of this endangered land and presents an impassioned call to save it. In January 2006, when he was just a restless 18-year-old hungry for adventure, Paul Rosalie embarked on a journey to the West Amazon that would transform his life. In his new book, Mother of God, he relives his amazing odyssey exploring the heart of the wildest place on earth. He'll be doing a reading and signing at the Barnes & Noble bookstore in Kingston, New York, on Saturday at 2 o'clock. Again, the title of the book, Mother of God, An Extraordinary Journey and the Uncharted Tributaries of the Western Amazon. Paul Rosalie, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It's a delight. You know, when I was 18 years old, I was not doing what you did. I was doing 18-year-old things and thinking about what I was going to do with my life. So, at what point do you have an opportunity to say, "All right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to seek an adventure. I'm going to go to the Amazon."
You know, I grew up, you know, sort of adventuring in the hills around, you know, New York, and.
This
so
is different.
Which is very different, but you know, it leaves you sort of wondering how far you can go. And when you like wildlife, you know, and you like rainforests your whole life, you hear that it's disappearing. So there's that urgency there where you know, I always felt like I had to get there before it was gone. And so when I was after sophomore year of high school, I dropped out, took my GED, started going to college, and you know, I didn't have the opportunity to go to the Amazon. I sort of swam against stream to fight for the opportunity to go to the Amazon. It wasn't easy.
So what ultimately got you there?
A lot of asking around, a lot of hours working at the local YMCA, saving up money. And, you know, when you contact people at 18 years old saying, I'd like to go to the Amazon as a researcher, pretty much no one is going to take you seriously. So it took a long time to find a way to get to the Amazon.
So once you're there, was your idea to do work, to do research, to get to be employed, or was your idea just to go and sort of, and pardon this expression, bum around and sort of sniff around and see what you could find?
Well, I knew that this was going to be an experience that was going to be, you know, to me the rainforest. This was a journey I had to make. I knew that I was going to fall in love with it. I didn't know how much. I didn't know the magnitude of what I was getting into. I envisioned going there, and I didn't want to just bum around. I wanted to be a part of somebody, you know, of a project that were protecting things. And what I found was two people that owned a research station in an extremely remote part of Peru. And they were fighting to protect an area that was slightly larger than the island of Manhattan.
This area, and this goes back to what year?
This was 2006.
Okay, 2006. And not to jump ahead too much, but because it's Earth Day and because we think of these things, we should be thinking about them all the time. But okay, we set aside today, so let's do it. But you're looking at 8 years later,
mm-hmm.
how different is that place now?
We're seeing a lot of changes. I mean, I've seen roads cut through the forest. We have the Trans-Amazon Highway is a project that really affects the entire continent of South America and certainly the entire Amazon biome. And it's essentially just a system of highways that cut across the Amazon, sort of funded by the Brazilian government and the World Bank. And this has allowed people to funnel into the rainforest where for all of history it was completely inaccessible. So this has caused gold miners, loggers, and every other kind of extractor, farmers to fly in there and just completely change the landscape. And so what you're getting is this sort of Wild West where it's a free-for-all. The country is too big to police, and so you just have everyone's just opening it up. So I've seen a lot of changing, and last year flying over the Madre de Dios, there were parts where you could see the drying in the trees. You could see treetops that looked like they had lost all of their leaves, and that wasn't there in 2006. And a lot of other of my colleagues have been noticing the sort of drying that's going on in the Amazon.
Talk a little bit about this area, the Madre de Dios, of what of what type of area it is. Mm-hmm. The Amazon River runs through, correct?
It's the start of the Amazon River.
Okay.
Yes.
And it is, its climate is typically...
It's a tropical climate, but what makes it so special is the Amazon starts in the west of the continent and flows out east 4,000 miles into the Atlantic Ocean. But this is the edge of the Andes Mountains, so you have the glacial meltwater falling from these high peaks down through cloud forest and into the lowland tropical rainforest of the Amazon Basin. So you go from frigid altitude down to tropical rainforest, and contained in that range of climates is the greatest diversity of life on Earth. We have more birds, more butterflies, more mammals, reptiles, and amphibians. This is the engine that powers the Amazon. So it's one of the most important environments on our planet.
You tell the stories in the book, and I've watched some of the videos that you've done. You do a lot of videotaping, a lot of capturing of running tape of different things going on. The variety of wildlife is incredible.
It's amazing.
You see the deer, you see the birds, you see all of these creatures just sort of going about doing what they do. And it gives a fascinating insight into what happens when we're not around.
Yeah, it's amazing the effect that even a couple of farmers, you know, spread out over 100 miles can have. You know, the sound of a gunshot does a lot. Even if you're not affecting the populations, animal behavior starts to change really quick.
One of the points that you make in the book that I think is fascinating is that what is happening there matters to us.
Yeah.
And maybe we don't understand that. Maybe we don't see that connection. Talk a little bit about why it is in some ways a microcosm of our overall problems.
Well, the Amazon is sort of this it's kind of like a test, I think, for the global society. So you have this one forest, really, this one biome that produces a fifth of our planet's fresh water and a fifth of our planet's oxygen. So you think about this one place, if we lose that, we lose those two things, which I can't really imagine doing. But, you know, there's so many things. You know, the original cure for malaria came out of the Amazon during our Industrial Revolution, where we got rubber exclusively from the Amazon. That's where it came from. You know, mahogany, gold. There's so many things that come from this ecosystem, medicines. And, you know, the Amazon is sort of, you know, we're very connected to it in terms of what it produces and in terms of what we do up here affecting the climate of the Amazon and the health of the ecosystem.
When we talk about the environment, when we talk about climate change, there's so many facets to it that it's mind-boggling. One of the things that scares the zippers off me is water.
Yeah.
And you write about that, of the situation with water, of what a of just how fragile our water supply is.
Yeah.
Is really frightening.
It really is. And I spend a lot of time in India. My wife is from India, so, you know, my family and half my time is spent in India. And there you see people that don't have water.
Right.
You know, when you grow up in New York, you turn on the faucet and you always have water. You take it for granted. But even we get our water from natural reservoirs. And, you know, I grew up, again, growing up in the hills of Ramapo Reservation and Harriman State Park in New York and New Jersey, you can't drink the water in the streams. That would be, you know, almost crazy.
Yeah,
we know it's dirty. In the Amazon, it was sort of a very important experience for me. The first time I was standing next to a stream and you have this brown, you know, mocha looking current flowing through, and you can drink that. It's completely clean, you know, and you can just, you're thirsty as you're hiking, you bend down and you drink from the river, which to me was a very profound experience, because I'd never had that happen before. You know, and I think that over a lot of the world today, it's unadvisable to drink from a natural water body. But in the Amazon, you know, the water, it's its own system. And part of the reason the Amazon is so fragile is that through global warming, through deforestation, you know, we're scared that if you cut too much of this system, that the moisture that the jungle itself produces, that also nurtures the jungle, if you cut too much, that drying could cause burning, which could cause a tipping point where they worry that the entire Amazon could be lost.
One of the things that struck me in the book is the is you, and you used the word profound a moment ago, which made me think of this, and that is that you seem to throughout the book and throughout this journey of being very appreciative and having sort of a wide-eyed excitement as to what you were seeing. Mm-hmm. I'm curious as to at what point did you become, because you continue to be fascinated by what is around there, and it's always something new and always something exciting. But was there a point where you said, okay, I'm comfortable here?
That happened pretty rapidly, but I'm one of those people. I mean, I look at the world around me, and I feel like, you know, if you're not amazed, you're not paying attention.
Right.
You know, the world we live in is just an incredible place. But when you get to the Amazon, you know, it's like Jurassic Park and Avatar crammed into one, and you're in it, and it's real. And you know, there's you walk through the jungle at night, and there's, you know, you shine your headlamp into a swamp, and all of a sudden you light up these previously invisible rainbows of different colored frogs, and there's tarantulas on the trees that are eating fish, and there's jaguars, and there's night monkeys, and there's all this life moving around you. And then, you know, you're out all night, and then the sun comes up, and you dive into the river, and there's macaws flying through the sky. It's a place that even now where that's home, you know, I feel completely at home in the Amazon. Still, I just, you know, I can't sort of get over this oppressive awe that is always there. And as a guide and as an educator, I bring people there and I see it, and I sort of lead them into these situations. And part of my job is sharing that with people. And that's part of the book.
And I think it's necessary. And I, you know, this could be thought of as frivolous, but I don't think so. Where, you know, 20 years ago, you mentioned Amazon to people and they would think of that place. Now you mention Amazon to people and they think of where they, you know, where they can buy a video game and pantyhose, you
yeah.
know, and it's important to tap on the shoulder and say, yeah, well, this is what the Amazon is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually, you know, there's those of us who feel like that is a little bit annoying. You know, the Amazon had an identity, the Amazon rainforest, the Amazon,
right.
That's it. Now for a large percentage of people, the Amazon is sort of this other thing, that place that's far away. And the store is the go-to reference for the word Amazon.
Let me ask you, because I in reading the book, you certainly sound an alarm. You certainly talk about the conservation efforts that are being done. You talk about ecotourism in the book. With all of that said, there is a very much an optimistic tone,
well,
I think, in your book.
No, I agree. And I think that today, you know, when I'll give you this example. When I grew up, I always assumed that bald eagles were something that you saw in Alaska, in Montana, in one of those romantic wilderness places.
Right.
And it turns out that living near New York City in the Hudson Valley, that bald eagles are from here. You know, in the 70s, they were wiped out with the whole DDT thing, and that was part of the environmental movement. But people got together, and they stopped what was killing the bald eagles. And now we're seeing the population come back. And actually, just the other day, I was kayaking in the Hudson Bays, and I saw two bald eagles in one outing.
Yep.
And it seems like things, you know, get worse before they get better. People need to experience a threat before they sort of protect themselves. And I think that right now in a lot of the world, we're reaching that point where our, you know, our fisheries are collapsing, and people are saying, wow, it used to be great when we had free fish in the oceans. And, you know, it used to be great when we had clean water. And once they lose those things, they start appreciating them. And I think that globally now, with people are so connected, you know, every day I check my email and I have messages from colleagues in Indonesia and Africa and people who are working to protect elephants and rhinos and tigers and waterways. And because of that immense connection, and because people can petition and get information so much faster, I think that there is a cause for optimism against the overwhelming darkness that is, you know, thinking about anything environmental. I think that, you know, like anything else, there's a job to be done, you know. You know, the World War II generation, they had their fight. This is our fight. And if we lose this one, we kind of, you know, there's that great Carl Sagan quote about that anything else you're interested in is not going to happen if you can't drink the water and breathe the air.
Right.
You know.
Well, the book is fascinating and very enjoyable. It's Mother of God, An Extraordinary Journey into the Uncharted Tributaries of the Western Amazon. It is published by Harper. Paul Rosalie is the author. He's going to be doing a reading and signing at Barnes & Noble in Kingston, New York, this Saturday at 2 p.m., and it's at the Barnes & Noble in Kingston. Again, the title of the book is Mother of God. We'll have more information on our website at wamc.org/roundtable. Paul, congratulations on the great book. Congratulations on your great work, and I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it.